a Little Rock radio legend and a radio hero of mine, Tom Wood, joins me here in the studios of KUAR. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Michael.
Thank you for coming by.
Oh, it's a pleasure not only to get asked to do this with you, but I love being in this building. I'm a constant 89.1 contributor and listener.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Appreciate that. We met probably about 32, 33, 34 years ago. You wouldn't remember it probably, but I was in high school and I was dating the guy who was then sales manager of Magic 105, Joe Rook's little sister.
Yes.
And
wasn't her name Buff?
Buffy. Yeah, that's what she went by. She'd find it endearing. You still remember.
There were a lot of high school age people. Back in those days, the personality aspect of radio was a lot more than it is now. Now it's kind of confined to the morning drive shows. But back then, we all had personalities that we were able to exercise and flaunt in our different shows on the radio station. And a lot of high school artistic students, you know, maybe their outlet was theater or maybe their outlet was writing or whatever it might have been. They found it interesting. I knew lots of high school people who were interested in the radio station. And I'm sure you're familiar with Scott Romine, who works with the Guatney Chevrolet corporate folks now. But he was a high school student during those same years and used to contribute written comedy bits to our radio station.
Wow.
So you weren't alone in the sense that at that age you were interested in radio.
Yeah. Well, key thing I remember was you somehow Joe set it up for us to you to take Louisa and I to see some concert. It might have been David Lee Roth with Poison opening. I'm not quite sure. It's something around 88 or so, but I remember her brother dropping us off at your house. And first thing I was struck by, you had, I believe, a CBS Records gumball machine.
I do remember having that.
Do you still have that?
No, I don't still have the gumball machine. One thing I don't regret it personally, but I regret it in situations like this, is I've never been a keeper. I get that from my father, I think. My father was very stoic and nomadic almost in his possessions. He only kept what he needed. And over all these years of broadcasting, I've been given or run across tons of really cool memorabilia, and I tend to give it all away. I give it to people. I get asked a lot from within the radio station to donate things. For example, our rock station has a annual fundraiser called the September Fund, and one of the things they do to raise money for scholarships for first responders kids is an auction. And every year, Corey and Patrick come to me and say, "You got anything that maybe you could donate?" And I'll look around my office and here's a platinum record award that was given to me from the Trans-Siberian Orchestra management. And it's wonderful to get it. Yeah. Has looked great on the wall for a few years, but you know, I'm not going to put that on my home wall or anything. And so I'll give that to them and they get a lot of money for it. So that's great.
Yeah. How many years have you been in radio now?
I got my first job at my first radio station in 1973. So what is that? That's 27 and 19. That's 46 years.
Wow. Yeah. You're surprised to still be doing it? The industry's changed so much.
It's a completely different horizon, completely different landscape now. And no, I'm not surprised that I'm still doing it. I'm maybe there's a little bit of surprise that it's still excites me and I still look forward to every day and I go in with a full head of steam, you know, ready to tackle anything. I miss being on the air. I miss having a, you know, a shift on the air because my position at iHeartMedia has evolved into we have four radio stations in our cluster is what you call them in the business of corporate radio these days. And in the Little Rock cluster, we have a country classic station, The Wolf. We have new country station, Kissin'. We have an active rock, new rock station, The Edge. And then we have a top 40 CHR station, Hot 94.9. And the personality lineup on all those stations is such that they're set. They've got what they need. And when the last station that I was on with a daily shift big 94.9, which was a 70s and 80s station, I fit perfectly, but I don't fit perfectly into the CHR format. And so I was kind of the odd man out, but thank goodness they saw some value in the production and legal and community affairs stuff that I still do.
So where did you start out, 1973?
1973, I started out at Southern Illinois University, a situation almost identical with the exception of the modern amenities that you've got here at KUAR and KLRE. At Southern Illinois University's on-campus radio station, which was an NPR affiliate, WSIU. And then there was a student-run radio station, which was Carrier Current. The only places you could get it were university buildings on campus. And that was called WIDB. We used to joke that it stood for We in the Basement, because that's where the studios were, in a basement of one of the dorms. And I got started there. And after a year there, got a job at a local, this was in Carbondale, Illinois. That's where SIU is. And there's a little town outside Carbondale called Heron. And there was an AM radio station there, WJPF. And I got a tip on a opening there. And so I went and applied for it and got the job. And my last 2 years in college, you talk about missing all the parties. My last 2 years in college, my shift at WJPF was Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday nights from 6 p.m. to midnight. So I missed all the weekend parties, but I was doing what I loved.
Yeah. And from there?
From there, from WJPF, I stayed with WSIU and WIDB. So I was working at three different radio stations for the remainder of my college career. When I graduated, almost said retired, when I graduated in 1975, I had applied for a number of jobs, and I got one at a small FM station in Columbus, Indiana, which is about 30 miles south of Indianapolis, called WWWY. Those were the call letters. We called it Tri-WY. It was an adult contemporary station. I was the morning man and the assistant PD, and was there for about 3 years, and then got a job in Danville, Illinois, just a tiny a bit larger town, this time program director and morning man at an AM Top 40, and only spent a year there before I got an offer from Peoria, Illinois, my first reasonably sized town to work in, at a FM Top 40 station that was taking on a powerhouse AM station in that market. WIRL was the station that was dominant for Top 40, but FM was becoming a real business opportunity for broadcasters. This company, which was called Midwest TV, owned the AM, FM, and TV. It was a CBS affiliate in Peoria, and the FM, which was WKZW, we called it KZ93, was going to take on WIRL in a Top 40 war, FM versus AM, new kids on the block versus the old stalwarts, market mainstay morning show, the whole thing. And within a year, we had stolen 75% of their ratings. It was because of the young attitude that we all had. We had this unbelievably energetic staff. We were aggressive with music. We were aggressive on the streets. We had the superior FM sound. And it was thrilling to have that kind of success that we had. So I was there for 3 years, mornings, and assistant program director again. And the man that I was working for, his name was Dick Booth. He was the radio president for Midwest TV for that AM and FM. And he came to me one day and he said, a partner of mine that I used to work with in Pittsburgh have bought a radio station license in Little Rock, Arkansas. Would you be interested in moving there with us and putting the station on the air as program director, helping me? I'll do all the business and the administrative and the legal, he said. Gordon Hyges, man who's been in this market for a long time, is going to be the sales department guy, and then I would be the programming guy. Well, I didn't know anything about Little Rock, and so Dick flew my wife and I down here. We'd been married. I got married in 1976, so this would have been, we were 3 years married, had one small child just born. And we came down and looked at Little Rock and thought, you know what? This is exciting. It's an opportunity to come down here with somebody I already know and trust, and let's do it. And so we did. My wife's in those years was in special education. Not difficult to find a satisfying professional position in that. Professionals are always needed in those areas. And so she was not hesitant at all. And we came down, got here in the late fall of 1979. And for about, well, from December of 1979 until August of 1980, we built the building. We were in Conway. The station was licensed to Conway. Mm-hmm. Used to be an FM station named KKLF and was licensed to a man named Lloyd Stone, who was a judge and was going to run. This is my memory of the situation. I hope I get this right. Mm-hmm. He was going to run for a local political office and couldn't hold a broadcast license at the same time running for political office. So he had to divest himself of that property. And that's where Dick and Gordon got the opportunity to buy this license for a song, really, if you look at the price structure. The money came from a couple of families in Norfolk, Virginia, which had made fortunes in shipbuilding for generations and the manufacturer of agricultural fertilizer. And they had a money manager named Fred Martin, who was personal friends with Dick and Gordon from years gone by. This family, these families were told by Fred, you have too much profitable funds here. You have to make some investments, hopefully investments that will lose you some money for a while so you can get some tax write-off.
Tax write-off.
He said, broadcasting is a great way to lose some money. And I happen to know a couple of guys who are interested. One thing led to another. They bought the radio station. I think they bought that license for $600,000. And many years later, Dick sold it for multi-millions of dollars, and they all lived happily ever after. But we came down here, and for that first 9 months, we built the building in Conway, which would to be our studio, perfected the building on Rodney Parham, which is where close to where Delicious Temptations is, mm-hmm. and that whole strip shopping center. There's a business office right there. That's where our business office and sales offices were. But for that first 9 months, Michael, I got to tell you, it was the greatest education of what our potential audience was going to be that I could have ever hoped for, because I wasn't on the air every day. I was working. I was laying sheetrock, hanging sheetrock and laying carpet and working with guys on ductwork. I'd never done any of this kind of work before, but I got to have lunch with these guys every day. I met them at work every day. We talked about music. We talked about what was important to them. I got to understand the passion for college sports in Arkansas, which was, it's not like that in Illinois. And I just learned so much. And I got to listen to every radio station in the market.
Yeah. And what stations was, I assume it was KAAY and KQ94?
Absolutely right. And KLRA with Brother Hal doing the morning show, which absolutely fascinated me. I'd never, ever heard anybody like Brother Hal before. It was like a slice of this county every day for the taking. You know, we didn't start work at the building until 8 o'clock, but I was getting up every single morning at 5:30 so I could listen. It was fascinating to me. I loved it. And I'd heard all the different morning shows and all the, as you say, KAAY was a tremendous power in the market. KQ94 did for rock in Little Rock what we did in Peoria with that FM Top 40. Mm. They just had the superior signal. They had a tremendous energetic staff that was cool. They were cool people. They were playing music that everybody liked in that area that was called the Superstars format, developed by a fellow named Lee Abrams. And that's what Stewart was basing his playlist on. Stewart was the program director for KQ94. I can't remember Stewart's last name, but that's what they were running. And it was just like a college education in 9 months. For broadcasting in the market that we were hoping to make a mark in. And nobody really gave us much of an opportunity to get a big, huge start because they all, as I would have done had I been the competitor, said, this is a Conway licensee. They're not going to compete effectively in the Little Rock market. They're going to be great for Faulkner County and for Conway, but don't worry about them as a possible advertising buy for your product.
And this was 100,000 watts?
Yes, with the tower in Mayflower. The transmitter was in Mayflower up on Round Mountain. We eventually moved our studios to that same location because the tower kept getting vandalized. Our engineer, our chief engineer, actually lived in a trailer, he and his wife, on the grounds on Round Mountain, rent-free for a number of years when that transmitter was up there. But yeah, this is a powerful radio station, and we filed for the necessary adjustments to our signal with the FCC so that we could make it more effective in the Little Rock market, did everything necessary, and it was within a year and a half, we had an 8% share of the market, and then we began to refine what it was we were doing, getting more and more aggressive, and before you know it, it was the beginning of about a 15-year period where we were just wildly successful. Had the morning show to beat all the morning shows, and it was just a really, really fun time.
Yeah, I remember KQ94 when they went to country. Mm-hmm. How long until that happened?
If I had to guess, I would say 3 years. Maybe that's too long.
Uh-huh.
Did you think that was too long or not enough?
83, 82.
Yeah, something like that. I think that's about right. I think they saw the writing on the wall and realized let's not get our heads stoved in here by this radio station that nobody really thought was going to do well, but Magic 105 really created a tremendous typhoon of popularity, and KQ94 said, we've got a better opportunity to make some money if we switch formats.
Where did the name come from?
We wanted to have some kind of a name that stood out. At that point, I was unaware that around the country, Magic as a name for a radio station was primarily used by either adult contemporary stations or urban stations. I'd never been in a city that had a Magic in it, and we thought this could mean just about anything. And at that point, we hadn't decided on a rock format. We were kind of leaning that way because that's where Gordon and Dick and my backgrounds were. Gordon had some urban music background. Dick had some top 40 background, as did I. But rock was basically what we all knew best. And we wanted to pick something that could be almost anything. We actually patterned that first blue and white logo after an old Showtime cable TV logo that we saw that we really liked. And so we kind of adjusted this and changed that and created that and kept that for 10 years and then got a new logo after 10 years. And
yeah, I can see both in my head. But that first one, the white and blue with the real broad bumper sticker.
Yeah.
And yeah, that was everywhere. People loved it.
Yeah, it was a source of pride for, I think, people to show that they were a Magic 105 listener. We had a lot of very, very loyal listeners, and I think we created that with what happened in between the songs, you know, that kind of personality. I did the morning show for the first maybe 3 or 4 years of the radio station and had hired Tommy Smith. He was friends with a guy that was one of our very first hires, Sandy O'Connor, who had been on KKYK radio here in Little Rock and wanted to become a bigger part of a radio station. And he came and aggressively sold himself to us. And he had a lot of radio record company contacts. And so we saw this as a real plus. He's a great guy. And so we hired him as our music director. And he told me about a guy that he was friends with that had just gotten out of the Navy and was working in Colorado Springs, wanted to come back home to Little Rock, Arkansas. This was Tommy Smith. And so I said, well, next time he's in town, have him talk to me. So he came up and we interviewed and I liked him. And we put him on at first the night show, realized how good he was, moved him to afternoons, realized how good he was as we took any shackles of his personality off and just said, here's a few basic rules that we want you to follow on that afternoon show. But basically, go crazy. Let yourself do what you feel is right. And groomed him a little bit, you know, here and there. But after we realized what a hit we had, I thought, why am I doing the morning show here? He's way more potentially huge. So we moved him to mornings, moved me to middays. And that was the classic lineup for the rest of the history of Magic 105.
Yeah, I remember it well. And then you doing middays, the Brown Bagger All Request Hour.
Yep.
That seemed like, correct me if I'm wrong, I wasn't paying as much attention to formatics, but that seemed more like one time when the music was maybe a little more free-form, not as programmed, or you did maybe dig deeper into albums or or older, more obscure stuff.
It was completely free-form. It truly, truly was based on listener input. You know, if there were something that were out, if there was something that was out there that was particularly hot back in those days, I remember being on the edge of our seats when a new Van Halen album would come out or something like that. I remember when the Coda collection from Led Zeppelin came out after John Bonham's death, and we were just blown away by the fact that there was new Led Zeppelin music that we could play. If something like that were to be current, I would always try to work a cut or two from those albums into the Brown Bagger, whether someone called for them or not. But the rest of the show, and we could probably play, I used to fudge it as much as I could. Our last commercial break in the 11 a.m. hour would start at 11:50. It would end by 11:55. I'd start it right after that. I wouldn't use that famous singing Brown Bagger theme song until noon, but that would give me an extra song or two at the beginning to fulfill requests. And our first break in the 1 o'clock hour wouldn't come until 1:10 or 1:12. So that would give me two or three songs after the noon hour. Uh-huh. So instead of having only 1 hour of requests, I'd have like about an hour and a quarter and be able to fit in more requests. But all of those slots were filled by songs that people had called in. And we had theme shows that we'd do, and people really got into that. You toss out an idea for an hour and a quarter of music. You know, let's say today we're only going to play songs that have cities' names in the title. People love to show off their knowledge, and you'd answer the phones and you'd get some that you would definitely expect, but I would always be surprised by something that somebody would think of. And I think that's just awesome. That's great. And I'd run down the hallway and try to find the CD and run back, and or I'd have somebody go down to see if they could find it for me. And it was just exciting. It was just exciting.
And the audience can pick up on that level of excitement.
Absolutely, they can. And their voices are on the air, too. You know, we'd put the phone calls that asked for that song. We'd always ask them where they called from or if they wanted a dedication. The old stuff that started radio as such a warm medium is still important today. We've all become such high-tech people. I don't know that we really remember that it means the world to somebody if they've called a radio station they love and said, my dog's run away. Can you help me put a message out to find him? If you do it, it's unbelievably powerful. If someone's going to a funeral and they want you to play Freebird and you do it, I can't tell you how strong the bond is for the rest of their lives with that personality or that radio station or that moment in their lives. I have people quote things to me today that I did in their mind for them in 1985 and 1986. And it just, the fact that they remember it chapter and verse, you know, all these years later, it's just so powerful. And radio's got that. TV doesn't really have that. You know, podcasts don't really have that, but radio still has that, and we don't use it nearly as much as we should.
Yeah, the live element, and when you can actually talk with listeners, and if you do actually have the freedom to have some latitude of discretion over what you're playing. I feel that when I fill in for Flap here on KUAR occasionally, doing not necessarily Nashville.
Yep.
It's just going back to playing music I love.
Yes.
How tight was Magic 105's format? Because I was fairly young. I was born in 71, and I remember I was really blown away by MTV, and they were playing things that were not on the radio at all. But I remember I would call Magic 105. I think it was Casey Jones who I irritated by calling, asking for missing persons.
Oh yeah,
metal hopscotch.
Great.
So y'all would delve into some new wave.
Yes, absolutely. As a matter of fact, Reed Mitchell came up with an idea. Reed did our overnight show for many years. He's one of the co-managers of the Arkansas Records and CD Exchange now on MacArthur in North Little Rock. Reed did our overnight show for a long time and came to me one day with an idea. He said, I'd like to feature new wave music exclusively for a couple hours one night every week and call the show, this is one of my all-time favorite titles for a show, Detour 105. And I thought, number one, greatest title for a show I've ever heard. Number two, yes, let's do that. And so I think it was on Wednesday nights from midnight to two, and all that music was played. And that was a style of music that new product came out all the time. If you think when punk exploded, it gave anybody who could pick up a guitar an opportunity to record music because it wasn't that sophisticated. It was more emotion than it was artistry. New wave was kind of like that too. Synthesizers were available. I think about bands like Missing Persons or that whole ilk of bands. There were new bands coming on the horizon all the time, and Reed featured all that stuff. And the artists around the country, around the world for that matter, would notice when radio stations in reasonably sized markets, like Little Rock, were featuring that kind of music. And they'd call in, and he'd do interviews with them. And if they came and played at Juanita's, there were used to be live music every night at Juanita's. We'd always get what we call the welcomes package, get our logo in the newspaper. It used to be a daily ad for Juanita's that would show all the bands that were coming. You remember the Spectrum newspaper?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they used to take almost a half-page ad. And when we could get our logo on two or three of the acts that were coming in the course of a week, home run. We were so thrilled. And it was just this great symbiotic relationship between all the entertainment entities. But back to your question about how tight the playlist was. The only tightness we adhered to, Michael, was to maintain the reporting status to the radio trade magazines. If you would call them, and this was what Sandy O'Connor, as our music director, would do, every week you'll get calls from the record companies saying, here's the priority new releases for us here at Warner Brothers. Here's the priority releases for us at Reprise or whatever it is. And they try to sell you on it, you know, just like any person would try to sell somebody on a piece of music or a painting or whatever it might be, or a refrigerator for that matter, if you're, you know, shopping for appliances. And we would make our decision after listening to the songs, which ones we were going to add to the playlist. And then you wouldn't be able to legitimately tell the trade magazine, this song is getting airplay on this radio station in Little Rock, if you were just playing it on the overnight show once a day. Mm-hmm. You had to give it a minimal number of plays. So we concocted a rotation for these differently categorized songs so that there were a few slots every hour that were required to include these songs in these categories. The other thing that was different about rock radio back then was how much library material we would play while also featuring new music. It was nothing to play three or four tracks from the new Pretenders album to acquaint the city with the fact that this new Pretenders album had come out, but at the same time still be playing A Hard Day's Night from the Beatles and the Jay Giles Band's first album cuts and stuff like that. So mixing all that music into a balanced hour was where the real artistry of the music came in. And then we had lots and lots of request shows that were on. The Brown Bagger was a fully request show. We had nighttime request shows. Jeff Allen, who for a long time did our night show, had, I can't remember what he called it, but his Monday night, the last 2 hours of his Monday night show were basically for people if they had something that had gone wrong for them over the weekend. It was like, pick a song that allows you to vent your rage. I'll let you tell the story on the air and I'll play your song. And for 2 hours every Monday night, that's what he did. And there were lots of little features like that.
Yeah, it was a different era in that the audience was so involved. And these days, I don't know if, you know, except for maybe syndicated live shows, if you can really pick up the phone and call and talk to the jock. You know, back then, there was someone there behind the board 24/7.
Absolutely. And your eye was on the phone all the time. You wanted that phone to ring. You wanted to answer it quickly. Of course, we had our lines. If somebody asked for something that you knew you probably weren't going to be able to play or that you had just played.
I'll see what I can do.
That's the key right there. I'll see what I can do. Thanks so much for calling. And I'll never forget this. I had the band Hot Tuna, which was an offshoot of Jefferson Airplane and Jefferson Starship. Jack Cassidy, the bass player, and Jorma Kaukonen, who was the guitar player, broke off and had this side project called Hot Tuna. Very successful, really. They were playing at Juanita's one night, and they came up to the radio station that afternoon for an interview. So I interviewed them on the air, and while we were in a commercial break, the phone rang, and I picked up the phone. Hi, Magic 105. Loving the interview. Hey, when it's over, could you play so-and-so? Yep, I sure will. I'll see what I can do. I wrote down the song title and hung up the phone and went back to my conversation with these two guys before the commercial break was over, and they both looked at me and said, I can't believe you took that request seriously enough that you wrote it down. You didn't just give them a passing, you know, polite response and had no intention of playing. And I said, oh, no, that's how we've created this monolithic radio station that's part of people's lives. If there's any possibility of playing that song after you guys finish, I'm going to do it. And they were both blown away by that.
Well, I remember making requests, and it might take an hour, but I'd hear it, you know, usually, as I said, in the evening or whatever. Yeah. But they could probably tell I was some kid, you know, just had seen something on MTV. And, you know,
I'll tell you another thing that you're short selling yourself in terms of the way the whoever the jock was, Casey Jones or whoever it was, that would answer the phone. We were all, and I can speak for any music jock who ever had the opportunity of working in those years, we loved a well-spoken request that was interesting from somebody. Love talking to people like that. You're going to get the people who call in and just, you know, there's nine people in the background and they're all yelling and screaming and they're laughing and they're having a good time, and that's great that they're listening. But when somebody calls up and is calm and well-spoken and knows what they're asking for and gets the name of the band right and knows the name of the band and the name of the song, love that kind of phone call.